Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to episode 87 of the Mini PC Show, Big Talk, Small Computers, brought to you by Tom O, one of my buddies. And thank you for being Patreon, Tom. Dor, what have you been up to?
Hey, Rich. I've been going normal, crazy is what I want to say. Father-in-law just got out of the hospital this morning for passing out while on the can, and the nurse told him, "You almost pulled an Elvis."
Oh, man.
Yeah, he had pneumonia and something else. He was in quarantine in the hospital for like 2 days. So he wasn't very happy, but he's out now, so that's good.
Wow.
Yeah, and then, you know, there's always something going on. It seems like this has been not a good year for health for everyone. So I'm almost afraid to ask you how you're doing.
Well, I don't know. If you watch my Instagram posts, I had a very, productive weekend full of honeydews, and probably the worst thing that happened over the weekend was the freezer. We have the drawer freezer, and the drain line, when it defrosted, got clogged up again, and it started icing over, and I had to tear the bottom of the refrigerator apart and unfreeze it. Did an oil change, had some lights on the truck that my daughter drives, a little bit of carburetor cleaner seemed to clean that up. Still waiting a couple of days to make sure that's good. And I got Bluetooth sensing running on my house, so I'm pretty happy about that.
Okay, but slow down. Instagram, I don't know what that is. That sounds like some sort of drug dealer thing, so I'm going to not be there.
That's Instakilogram, that is.
That sounds violent. I'm just really quick to say, before we get started, I have been using the ROG Pro 64. I commented on multiple shows as like my portable desktop back and forth to work. I've been touting about the performance, and I will say it is unbelievably desktop-like. Dramatic pause. Until you try to play video. The video on it is literally like one frame a second. Right now I'm running Armbian Debian version. Now it is, I believe on the Armbian page, it does say it is in testing mode, so it's not saying it's stable, but at work, I don't watch video on it. So it took me weeks before I even thought about, well, let me try to watch a video. And it was literally like one frame a second on YouTube, or if it was a local video.
See, I'm betting that the OS is not tuned for the GPU, and that's the issue. That you're probably watching the video, and it's all going through the CPU and not the GPU.
Yeah, and there's little doubt in my mind, if I loaded up a Android-based operating system, video would play just fine. So I do think it's nothing more than just like a tuning issue. I'm willing to bet when Armbian says it's stable, it's going to run fine. It might not run, 4K, 60 frames a second, which I really don't care if it can do that, but I'm sure it will run better. We can talk about the ROG 64 all day long because we have plenty of links, but Bluetooth presence. First, can you define what that means? Because honestly, when I first saw the link, I'm thinking Bluetooth presence. It sounds like we're going to create consciousness using Bluetooth. What?
Okay. All right. So I don't know when we talked last, but I also automated my garage door with a Sonoff SV. And so now part of my home automation is actually moving physical things. So that's getting cool. So with Home Assistant, I'm running Hass.io, which I didn't realize until I got it fired up and running. Actually, I'm running two versions of Home Assistant. I'm running Haspian, which is Raspbian with Home Automation Assistant on top of that. And I'm also running Hass.io, which is Home Automation Assistant in a Docker container. And there's like a Home Automation Assistant store, so you can say, hey, I want an MQTT server, and click a button, and it's installed. I want Node-RED hooked up in here, click a button, it's installed. So I'm all in on the easy part of this stuff. So I've been pretty happy about that. And I've been watching like Dr. Z, and I didn't realize, maybe I'm slow to the race, Dr. Z is an anesthesiologist. I didn't get that. So Dr. Z on YouTube, there's a couple of guys on YouTube that do all sorts of stuff with Sonoffs. And if you're into home automation, a Sonoff is an excellent deal. There's a Sonoff SV, and you can program it and put Tasmota on it, which the Sonoff phones home But if you put the new firmware on it, it phones your MQTT server that I one button clicked and installed in HassIO, and then it publishes messages about its state. So I use an alarm system magnetic read switch, and so it knows whether the garage door is open or closed, and that's all through MQTT. It talks back and forth with that. So it's like, okay, great, I got the garage door automated. Now I have the stupidest thing in the world automated, because either you push the button in your car or you push the button as you walk out the door. I actually have a remote on my desk, so if I want to go out through the garage, I'll push the button on my desk and get up and walk over there. So I've spent maybe $15 on doing, in some time, some number of hours, on doing the dumbest thing in the world. But what's good about having a garage door automated is if your house knows nobody's home, let me close the door. Or I have it automated. The automation that runs right now is 9:55 p.m. before the alarm system goes into armed mode. It closes the garage door automatically. It says, hey, is the garage door open? Oh, okay, we'll close it. And it does.
Yeah, see, that's the big plus. There's been years where we can tell it to do something, but to have the knowledge, is it open or closed, is something that I don't think there's been a lot of home automation that had that by default. We've only been getting that here more recent.
Yeah, so state is an important thing. Like, as in programming world, we all know what state is, but in garage door world, you know, we don't know what state is. And when you push a garage button, does it open, does it close? Who knows? Depends where it was, what state it was in. So if we know the state of the garage door, that's like the automation. It just doesn't push the button. It says, let me check the state. Oh, okay, it's open. It's 9:55 p.m. Let me close it. And it does. So that's the cool thing. Plus, I have cameras around the house. So if, you know, I make arrangements for somebody to deliver something, I could actually open the garage door, see them deliver it, and close the garage door. But more importantly, my daughter's told me a couple of times she's, you know, gone a couple of blocks away and realized she didn't close the garage door. And it'd be nice if the house knew nobody was in the house, garage door's open, let me close it. So what I did is, you know, I Googled around, Google is your friend, and I found somebody's project, and he's using Pi Zeros, and I have a number of Pi Zeros because I was up near a micro center, and I picked one up every time I was in the neighborhood. And the Pi Zero has Bluetooth and Wi-Fi on it.
Right, well, so you're getting ready to change to a different project, right?
Yeah.
Okay, well, first I'll say, you said a hell of a lot there, Rich. Could I ask for there to be some links you give me so we can put them in the notes so we can see this hardware? Because I am always interested in the idea of automating my garage door. And my garage door is sounds like the same thing. It has literally just one button. There's no up button. There is no down button. There is just one button. And it looks super easy to basically take that button apart and connect it to a Pi or another GPIO pin header kind of thing. So it should not be at all even remotely rocket science like in my logic to get it up and running. So if you can share some links for me and the listener, then we can do the same thing.
Line 845 has all of the links in a YouTube video I did on programming the Sonoff SV. I'm going to have to do a version 2 or, you know, part 2 of the video that shows how I hooked it up to the garage. I think I'm smart, but we'll see in a week or two if it continues to work as I expect and look smart. But I think I got a kind of a novel way of installing the sensors. And, well, for people, this I have a chain drive. So if you got a chain drive, I got an idea for you that might work pretty good.
I believe it's belt. I don't know if it's an actual chain.
Mm-hmm. So there's different ways you can do it. And the link for Dr. Z's channel, which I think is the first link. Yep. Yeah, the first link on the YouTube video that I have that's on line 845. That has how he did it. And I think for a chain drive, I got a better idea than him. Well, and like I said, we'll see if it proves its longevity.
Gotcha. Real quick question. About approximately how much in hardware did this cost to get done? And then how much did it cost in time to get all this set up?
Okay. So the board And I have links in there. The board is like $13.99, the Sonoff SV. I ended up soldering a header on it. So I had to have, you know, like some SIP headers, which you might buy a pack of them for a couple of bucks. You might buy one row for a dollar. Somebody showed in a video that they just stuck wires into the holes on the board to program it and just did not work. You need to solder a header on or solder wires in to program it. Now, being a mini PC guy, I used a Raspberry Pi 3 to program the board. So that was cool. I kind of like that. You can buy, like, if you just want to USB program it from, you know, a Mac or a PC or whatever. And unfortunately, they say the best way to program it from a laptop is using Windows. So I saw the shocked look. So I actually was Googling around so that you could program the Sonoffs with a Raspberry Pi, and it was easy as pie, so I did it that way. Because you got to put power, ground, transmit, and receive. So just like the old modem days. So you hook four wires up to it, and that powers it up. You get it into program mode. You flash the software on it. Then you open up a terminal to it, and you give it your Wi-Fi SSID and password. And then there's basically a web server on the board, the Tasmota software. And then you just configure MQTT server, you know, the IP address, username, password, and you configure the board itself, like what's a switch, because there's a relay on the board, and what's a sensor, so the GPIO pins on the board, and then it's ready to go. And better yet, you can back it up, which I did.
Good man.
So, okay, that's making the garage door smart. And I'll have to share a link because I don't think I have it in the notes here. I saw somebody had a project where they're using Pi Zeros, which I think this is a great use for a Pi Zero. One, because it's small, it's cheap. To use it as a Bluetooth presence detection. So my daughter drives, and because anybody that drives has their Bluetooth turned on their phone. So that's how I know when people are home. Now, this project works by, if you have N number of sensors, meaning Pi Zeros, configured to be sniffing for Bluetooth, it averages the value. So the guy that wrote the project, he had a three-floor home, and he's trying to detect what floor the people are on by signal strength, and he does it by percentage probability. I don't have a three-floor home. I have a house on an acre and a quarter of property. And so two sensors, I haven't really acid tested this, but in practical use, two sensors in my home seem to be working really well at detecting all of the occupants. Originally, I was doing it with the Bluetooth sensor on the Pi 3 that's running HassIO. And like if you're in the main living area of the house, it worked. If you were like on the east edge of the house, it didn't work. So this is working really good. What I'm thinking about doing is maybe putting one out in the tiki hut, which would cover the backyard, like the backyard and the swimming pool area. Put one under the soffit of the garage, which would cover like where we park and, you know, maybe the approach to the house. And then put one on the fence line where the gate is that we drive in, because I actually do have power at the gate. So now I can detect, hey, if I see Skylar's Bluetooth for... Now, Bluetooth isn't just your phone, it's also your car. So it's detecting whether my car is there, because Bluetooth has a MAC address just like any device that does Ethernet, just like a Wi-Fi or Ethernet port. So it has a MAC address. And you put a list of known devices in, so your phone, your car, whatever device it may be, and it'll track it. So if I see Skylar and her car passing the fence line, I know she left, or I have a good indication that she left the property. Like if I see her at the garage and then her in the car at the garage and then her in the car at the fence, I got a good idea they left. So I could put some Node-RED programming in there to say, hey, she left. Is there anybody home? Oh, there's nobody home. Let me make sure the garage door is closed. Oh, it's open. Let me close the garage door. That kind of thing. I'll tell you what I'm worried about is if I have like a sawhorse and some wood set up and I'm cutting boards and maybe my phone isn't in range or maybe the battery goes dead or something like that, then all of a sudden the garage door comes down on me. That's what I'm worried about.
Well, I'll say it's okay to think that. I would be almost more tempted to not use my phone's Bluetooth. Now, this is just me. Now, my kid's device, I'm going to use his phone as the Bluetooth ID. But for me, I would be almost tempted, and I hate to say it like this, Rich, I'd be almost tempted to get almost like a Star Trek comm badge, a small little Bluetooth, like dongle, a little device, a trinket, if you will, and then use that one because that battery would, I think, last for weeks and weeks and weeks where you don't have to charge it that often. But then you can hand it off. Now, the only caveat I'll say about this is I would not ever use any of this Bluetooth presence in regards with anything about security, because any MAC address on anything can be spoofed in one shape, way, or form. Now, if you're diligent and every time you leave your house, you turn off your Bluetooth on your phone, it's going to be really difficult for them to spoof it. But if you walk around all day with your Bluetooth on, then
and
it's
I do.
And I do too. So it would be fairly easy for someone to do that. But now with that said, I can see doing a crap ton of non-security related things with this Bluetooth presence. Literally just have one at my front door just so when my son comes home, it can automatically send me a tweet. I was thinking for months about doing a camera there. And I kept thinking camera, lighting, electricity, power. I mean, this is a lot of stuff. Bluetooth presence, my logic is there's no way that's going to use a lot of power. So I could literally have a battery backup connected to the wall and just have it. And because it's Bluetooth, it doesn't have to be pointing right there at the door. It can just be around the door. So
right.
I love the idea of this for in non-critical, non-security type of, I don't want to say automation, but information gathering
right.
and retrieving.
Right. It would be good for room detection. So if you know what room somebody's in, so a couple of things I've been imagining that I want to do. Well, first, let me tell you where I put the sensors. Right now, we come in through the garage, there's a laundry room, and then you go into the kitchen. And in that laundry room area is the alarm system, and there's a 2-outlet plug on the wall next to the alarm system. So I plugged it in there, and I have some cabinets above the washer and dryer, and I just threw the Raspberry Pi up there. The other one is in my office, but I put it high on top of the shelves I have. And you don't even see it. The wire runs up the back of the shelf from my data center in a cabinet now, and you don't even know it's there. So, and better yet, with my cloning methodology, not my cloning methodology, but I saw somebody had an article on cloning micro SD cards. So once you have an OS running and working exactly the way you want it, because it did take several hours to set up, compiling, etc. All I did is basically clone it, and then I just changed one of the text files for the MQTT, so it sent a different message. So the device broadcasting on MQTT had a different identification. And so right now, if I want to do it again, boom, I'll just fire up Etcher, burn another image, and bingo, have another device running after I just changed that one text file.
So the logic here then to me is Raspberry Pi Zeros, if you can buy them online, I want to say they're still less than $10 or like $5.
I think it's $5 in person if you buy one at a micro center, and I think most places it's $10 online.
Okay, well, then let's just hypothetically say 10. You buy a bunch of Raspberry Pi Zeros. They're literally nothing more than the endpoints. They're the data gathering mechanism.
Right.
But then like on a Raspberry Pi or on a x86 computer, you have mm-hmm. the actual server running where it actually analyzes the data.
Yeah, so you have a local MQTT platform. And so this is the cool thing. The Sonoff, like before you flash it, phones home. But after you flash it, it phones your MQTT server on your network. So that's a big thing to me. I want to keep all of my home automation devices on my land and not going off, you know, staying on the reservation. So the other thing I'm thinking about doing, and I've been talking about doing person identification. It's like, hey, this is a dog. Hey, this is a cat. Hey, this is a human. And then facial recognition, okay, that's a person's face. And then identification, that's a family member. So I've kind of shortcutted that entire process because I know who has what. We all have our phones. We got a death grip on them. So that's a pretty good way. I still want to do that type of stuff, the facial recognition identification, which I don't know if we have a line for that here, but we're talking about that before the show. But the other thing I want to do with the Bluetooth on the fence line is just run a sniffer and sniff MAC addresses. Because that could be a security tool. It's like, hey, somebody came by. Or let's say there was a break-in or a robbery in my neighborhood, and I sniffed all the Bluetooth packets, you know, Bluetooth MAC addresses. And I could say, yeah, I got information that this went by at this time. You know, just put a database entry, a row in a database with a time stamp, and log what goes by.
Gotcha. Very cool. Now, in the Mumble chat, I put an email. I don't think we read this email on the show. Did we, Rich?
I got to fire up the chat. Yeah, I'm not showing it in my chat.
Sorry, give me one second here. This is stimulating podcasting. Just stimulating. There you go. Sorry about that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I did read this. I think I may have replied to the guy, but all righty. Let's see. This is Tony C., and very nicely says, gentlemen, I listened to part of what I think was your last podcast. You guys are one of the topics I follow. All right, I want to make sure I read that right. When you went off on the Pi Foundation, the fact is not entirely open source, and the store may be open to make a buck. Maybe we didn't communicate the message well to him on that. I'm all for that. You know what? I think we both said, and maybe we need to reinforce it. People believe the Raspberry Pi is open source. It isn't. Is the Raspberry Pi earth-shattering, a complete, you know, absolutely stake in the road, different than every other device that came before it? Absolutely, because it has very widespread acceptance and a huge, huge amount of support. And I've been doing, you know, PIC microcontrollers, basic stamps. I never did propellers. I kind of sidestepped Arduinos. But definitely, all of these things came before the Raspberry Pi and had a small fraction of the impact of the Raspberry Pi. So, yeah, I'm, as much as we badmouth the Raspberry Pi, it's kind of like the crack I want more. I want a Pi 4 with, you know, gigabit Ethernet, with SATA, with USB 3. With USB-C, you know, like two USB-C ports on board. That's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah, there's more to the email.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm sorry. I just got one paragraph in. So, okay, he says he thinks we missed the point, which I think I covered. For next to no money, absolutely. The founder brought low-powered, low-cost computing to the masses and made it cool. Absolutely. 100% correct. In 20 years, we will be the leaders. In 20 years, there will be a leaders in the industry technology who will change the world and will have started with a Pi. Very likely. I run IT for a mid-sized firm and started with a Pi when they first came out and still run four of them at home along with some other brands. Okay. When I need to test out stuff and explore a new approach, I fire them up. Build what I need to at home for fun and not waste anybody's time at work. Great example. I do that a lot myself. The fact that the Pi is limited resources, in my mind, not an issue. I can do it with a Pi. I know it will scale. Right. If you can do it with a Pi, you know it'll scale. Absolutely. And I'm sorry if we conveyed the points different than what you're saying here, but I completely agree with everything you say. I got to scroll down. The fact that the Pi hardware is not open source is not a showstopper for me. Odroid, Pine, and any others may be able to beat the Pi's lunch, but doesn't matter. We are all in this together. Have fun. Change the world. Stay calm and solder on, he said. Absolutely. Good email. Excellent points. And if there was any vagueness or uncertainty in anything we said, Dor and I, like I said, I drove into Orlando last night. I grabbed a spare Raspberry Pi and shoved it in my backpack in case I was going to come up with anything I was going to do. And like six or seven Pi Zeros. So I got a Pi 3 and a bunch of Pi Zeros and a ROC 64 in my backpack.
Yeah, I can't read. I'm going to make excuses. I make as many excuses as I can, Tony. I have a really hard time reading, especially when it's more than just one sentence in an email. I am a jerk, is what I will say. I was a jerk to the Raspberry Pi Foundation on that episode. I'll admit, I was quite jerk-like. And I believe I was absolutely jerk-like when I replied to you, and which is really embarrassingly stupid of me, considering, Tony, you've been one of the guys who've been, I pretty sure, been listening to Podnut stuff for 8 years, if not more. So I apologize publicly, beg for forgiveness, beg for understanding. And I'll say this, I was a bit emotional about the whole thing only because I really want the Raspberry Pi Foundation to be more of the gold standard. I want them to be the Richard Stallman, if you will, where if we didn't have Richard Stallman, we wouldn't know what it would mean for someone to really fight for the absolute privacy that is really unobtainable, but he's really fighting for it. And I wanted the Raspberry Pi Foundation to stick with that moral base, is what I'll say. I'm not against making money. If I was against making money, I wouldn't be sitting here. I wouldn't have a house. I wouldn't have anything. I would be living under a bridge, philosophizing. I can't even say that word right. But I like money. I like having nice things. And so do the people at the Raspberry Pi Foundation. So I was taken back. I was confused. I was shocked, to be honest, about what they did. You said it very appropriately in your email. It almost doesn't matter what they do. It almost doesn't matter, to be honest, what I think or feel or believe about them, because they are the pioneers. They are the ones that everybody else is trying to be like. Whenever someone comes out with a new board, the first thing they say is Raspberry Pi killer. And they don't say Odroid killer. They don't say Pine killer. They say Raspberry Pi killer. And I really do hope that they continue the third world dedication, is what I'll say. And I'm going to keep buying them because I have no choice. Because like you said, they're the gold standard. If some project is going to be done for a mini computer, it's going to be done for Raspberry Pi. And then maybe weeks, months later, it will be done for other ARM platforms. But the Raspberry Pi is where it all starts and begins from.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, good. Definitely a good point. You know, Dor, I think there was another email we saw earlier, and I was talking about my knockoff Mac power supplies, and the guy was like, many fires, if I recall correctly, he said many fires were started by knockoff power supplies. So I've had the same, and, you know, there's no certainty on this. Let me just say that. They could put anything in the brick. It looks like the same brick. I got three of them. Yeah, they seem to work well.
Quick man from Scott here. When it comes to Apple chargers, this is one place where I strongly suggest not going third party. I've seen the insides of these chargers. I've seen them overheat. I've seen them burn themselves up and catch fire. For some reason, Mac and iPhone chargers are the worst victims of low quality Chinese knockoffs, which are severe fire hazards. There are overpriced, hell yes, but it's not worth risking the knockoffs. You're literally taking your life into your own hands. At best, you're risking your device. Then he has two links, one to a make use of and another one to a 9-to-5 Mac, where he says, basically, in my professional opinion, and I service computers professionally. If you go Apple, you must pay the premium soup to nuts for all the accessories. If you cannot stomach paying $90 for your spare MacBook charger, you shouldn't be buying a MacBook. I certainly never buy one. I service them every day, and I know too much about what Apple does for every to ever buy their crap. That was an email from Scott.
So, Scott, I hate to say it, you're 100% right. And you know, it's, I always say this, and I don't know if anybody's going to get the reference, Dorme. I was going to say ZZ Top. Van Halen, everybody was married except David Lee Roth. And David Lee Roth left the band, or the band got rid of David Lee Roth because he wanted to go on tour, because I guess you get better babes on tour. And so the band ended up with Van Hagar. And because they got a new member of the band, they had to go on tour. So not that the saying should make any sense to anybody else, but it makes sense to me. If you're Van Halen's going to go on tour with David Lee Roth, not Van Hagar. And I've been doing the Van Hagar thing. I'm holding up I did have a Apple knockoff lookalike power supply, and it lasted 11 months. And it had a one-year warranty, and they were like, oh, yeah, ship it back to China. And when I complained, I don't remember if it was Newegg, or I got a refund. They gave me a credit. I've been buying these. It looks like your regular computer power brick, but it's kind of dog bone shaped a little bit. And they've been working good, but I have seen Lewis Rothman has a YouTube channel. He's a New York City board repair guy.
Oh, he's so New York City.
makes me feel good. Yes, he speaks exactly like I would speak. I mean, I try to keep everything G-rated for, you know, videos and podcasts and all that bit. But yes, I would be speaking exactly like Lewis Rothman. One of his episodes, he mentioned that knockoff power supplies will actually damage your computer. I've been lucky enough to avoid that. But absolutely everything you've said was true. And I should be touring with Van Halen, not Van Hagar. But I've been doing Van Hagar.
Well, I mean, I'll say this. If I had Macs in my house and they were newer, I would only buy Mac stuff. Because I do think he's spot on with saying, for some reason, when you get a third-party Dell laptop power brick, it should work, at least mostly. You know, there are certain things I know that Dell does with power to enable certain things. So it might not be 100% compatible, but the likelihood of it burning your computer and causing fires, I think, is low. But I have heard more than a couple people say when they got even just iPhone charging cables that were knockoffs, that it literally killed their phone. So I don't know what it is, why it is, but it does seem like when the Apple stuff goes third-party cheap, they go uncommonly cheap. Can't hear you.
You're absolutely right. The can't go wrong buying the actual product, the OEM product. So spot on that.
Yeah, but I'm like him. I'm pretty sure I'm going to voluntarily get a foot amputated before I buy a Apple product in my house.
Yeah, this is my last MacBook Pro. After watching Lewis Rothman's videos, I am not buying another one. Not going to happen.
Well, and supposedly they just got rid of a whole bunch of hardware engineers and hired a whole bunch of software engineers. If you listen to stock market and finance people, they try to say now Apple is beginning a long pivot to being more service-based oriented and less hardware-based oriented. I will say, if it wasn't for the phone, the iPhone, I don't know if they would still be in business, because in everything else, they've been extremely unremarkable.
Yeah. So actually, I do want to make an analogy between Apple and Raspberry Pi. Before the iPod, there were many MP3 players and many different MP3 player products. And what made the iPod is that there was built into the Mac OS the ability to connect, sync, update the iPod. But for me, at the time, I liked devices that acted like a USB thumb drive, because I understand how to copy files. So that made perfect sense to me.
Yeah, this was Star Trek The Next Generation. You were Geordi LaForge, and everybody else was just a regular crewman. They had no idea how anything worked.
Yeah, yeah, and making that similarity is the same thing with the Raspberry Pi. There are many devices before the Raspberry Pi that did stuff. And in fact, there are a lot of SBCs, single board computers, whether x86 or other ARM computers, and they did all sorts of stuff. But definitely, the Raspberry Pi Foundation had that mojo, that magic, that Apple magic to get everybody involved, everybody producing software for it, and everybody use it. And just, we've said on many different episodes that if you're going to get into mini PCs, start with a Raspberry Pi. You're going to have the best experience that way.
Absolutely. I really quick also wanted to talk about line 834, Rich. And I hate journalists. I hate journalists. I absolutely hate modern day journalists, because there is no ethics or no morality in any journalism I see today. All they ever care about is getting that next big headline with insane amounts of clicks. So do you have any comment on Linus Torvalds pulls pin, tosses grenade, x86-1, forget about ARM in server CPUs, says Linus. This is just nothing more than complete troll clickbaiting, complete utter ridiculous crap. And here's the problem. Most people who only read the headline, which is most people, the first 80% of the people. And now if you take the remaining 20% who actually click the link, 80% of those people only read what the journalist says. So then only 20% of the remaining of those people actually go and actually try to find the source. This is what we call lateral searching. Lateral searching means you see something on a web page and the first thing you do is you click a new tab, and then you start your own querying and you find your information yourself. So anybody out there who hears these headlines and believes these imbecile, incredibly ethically lacking journalists out there, shame on you for not doing your due diligence as a consumer and try to find the real information yourself. So the gist of it is, Linus never says ARM on server is dead. He never gives up. He never says we're done. What he states is, you idiots out there, do you understand why x86 is winning? He never says anything about the future. He never says anything about tomorrow. He only mentions basically the past up to today. And yes, part of the reason why x86 is winning ridiculously is because they're out there, they are ubiquitous, they are servers. And you have laptops and you have desktops essentially running the exact same architecture, so it makes development more simplistic. There's much less of a need to do cross-compiling of code because you can run it on the exact same OS. So what he's basically saying, he's basically priming the pump. If this was, you know, like an old Civil War era thing, he would be priming something, getting ready for an explosion, basically saying, we need the Pinebook Pro. We need the Pinebook Pro to become real. If you guys out there want ARM to actually take over on servers, we need genuinely usable ARM-based operating systems that can be end-user sufficient as well. That's all he really said. But in typical Linus fashion, he trolled most elegantly, and he got these stupid journalists, these utterly stupid journalists, to overreact and state complete non-factors just to try to get clicks.
So I got a number of comments on this. One, the first comment would have to be Transmeta.
You said trans, and I ain't gonna lie, I worried.
So Transmeta, I'm reading from Wikipedia because I just remembered Linus was involved with Transmeta. I don't know if he was just a front man or, you know, a key technology person involved there, but it's a code morphing software consisted of an interpreter, a runtime system, and a dynamic binary translator. X86 instructions were first interpreted by one instruction at a time. Blah. Anyhow, He himself was, for a long time, or a number of years, I should say, involved with a company that did x86-like stuff and was basically an x86 substitute. The idea on the Transmetal was that it used less power because it had to run less silicone and more software. It initially was intended for laptops, but when they realized there was heat savings, they were using it in data centers also. Obviously, it didn't take over the world. But along with all of these other things, at the turn of the century, what ran NASDAQ? Do you know what processor ran NASDAQ?
I know it was overtaken and it was reprogrammed in like 2008 with Linux. I want to say before that, maybe it was MIPS?
SunSpark.
Damn.
Everybody on Wall Street ran Sun. Sun had a training facility across the street from the stock exchange. Guess who got Sun certified there? I'm holding my hand up.
Good man.
So, yes, I am a Solaris certified network and systems administrator.
I'm sorry.
But, you know, look at all the processors that have come and gone. And don't get me wrong, x86, so there's good and bad about x86. x86 has been around forever. x86 was the most popular processor ever built. I'm kind of saying that tongue-in-cheek. It might be like the Volkswagen. I believe the Volkswagen Beetle is the number one car in the world. The original version of the VW, I think, only stopped production in Brazil in the last decade. But if you look around, there's no VW Beetles anymore. And I believe that's going to be the same about the original Intel x86 chip. The good and the bad of the x86 is there's so many of them out there. And what that means is there's a lot of provision to do things in legacy mode that they don't get to start from a clean sheet of paper and do something new. So IBM has a Cell processor, which that was in the PS1, the PlayStations, is it?
PlayStation, I want to say, I don't know which one, but it wasn't either the 2 or 3, I think.
Okay, so there's the Cell processor out there. There's
MIPS.
MIPS. What was the... it started with an A. I forget what it was, but there Microsoft also ran on it.
Yeah.
Not ARM, it was something else.
No, it was but like Arcorn or something like that.
But there been a stinkload of number of processors out there. Motorola 68000 is one that's near and dear to me. The Mac, a lot of machines ran Motorola 6502, the original Apples, the original Amigas. So yeah, the Amiga ran the 68000, the Commodore 64 ran the 6502 along with the Apple. Yeah, there's a lot of processors out there that have come and gone, and somebody I know talks about the ARM processor being, is it the most highly produced chip, Dor?
Oh, it's by far. It is right now. It has the most number of installs, active installs of anything ever in the history of the world, kind of thing, because of mobile technology, basically. The two biggest things right now in the world by far are ARM processors and installations of SQLite. Two things that are, there's more of them than humans in the world, kind of thing.
That's a couple of things I did want to bring up also. So one, with the advent of ARM technology out there, in being so populous, there's a couple of good things about ARM technology. One is there's no Intel tax. You can license the ARM technology and build your own. Build it any way you want. So there's a lot of development work that's being done out there in the ARM world, in the ARM manufacturing world, and in the ARM software world. So that's a big plus. So if you're looking at charts about growth in processor technology, whether it's hardware, software, you're going to see a steep incline in the ARM world, and you're going to see something much more flat in the Intel world. So will ARM take over Intel? Maybe. It could be a good possibility. Is it going to continue to grow, and will it start permeating data centers? Well, Novell. Oh my gosh. VMware is now running ESXi on ARM. I don't believe they know what to do with it. What they're shooting for is endpoint management, like security and updates. So keeping the IoT world updated and secure. I told them, I've tried to reach as far up to the top as I can get talking to people there, is I want it just as it is. let me run it on my single board devices. Because right now I'm running Docker, which I like, but I would love to run a vCenter cluster. And if one host in my cluster fails, I'd love for it to have all of the vCenter properties and have them migrate over to another host and run there. So anyhow, I guess a bunch of thoughts on this. And likewise, same thing with database technology. What is the most popular database? You said SQLite.
By far.
Was it Oracle? Was it Microsoft a few years back? Who was number one? Just like IE was the number one browser at one time.
Well, that was because it was the tyranny of the default, where people didn't install anything. Oracle, to be honest, hasn't been number one for almost a decade. SQLite is in almost every embedded OS, and that's where the dirty secret is. If you have like specific telecom equipment in the closet that you don't have direct access to run root, and it just does this thing, well, it has SQLite. Your little pocket kid's toy, like back in the day, had SQLite. Everything had SQLite on it, and the reason why they had such big numbers was you would install applications on the Windows desktop, like Instant Messenger or something, it had SQLite on it. You would install games and it would have embedded SQLite in it. That's why SQLite blew every other thing away. Now there's like four links in the show notes starting at 835, 836, 837, 838. The first one is Intel knows that the game is a changing. Intel knows that their numbers are bad. Intel stock is reflecting that. Intel hires and fires are reflecting the fact that they know everything underneath them is changing and they're trying to remain relevant as they can. I want Intel to continue to do good. Intel is an American-based company, just like Microsoft. While I hate Microsoft, them doing good is good for the country, so I'm not completely against it. Same thing with Intel. Intel has announced beginning 2020, they're going to have their truly dedicated, discrete GPU available on the market. So I think they're going to go for mid-graphic, high-performance, if it makes any sense. They're not going to worry about 6K television running at 120 frames a second kind of thing. I think they're going to worry about doing screens that people don't need insane performance on, but to do a pretty picture on with these discrete GPUs. And I do believe they're going to be able to do low-end video games well. So Intel is pivoting to try to become a different type of company is what I'll say. Now, they're still going to do processors, of course, but these discrete GPUs are going to give them an in another area. I do believe the idea of introducing different processor architectures into environments can give security unto itself, just because it's a different processor. Not all code will run on it. That will make it more secure by default. So to have a different platform as your management architecture network, I think it's a really good idea. I think it has really good promise. Now, the next three links in the notes are about ARM, and they announced a couple things. ARM is a British company that basically publishes standards and schematics, and then they allow people to build off of it. So the two things they announced was the ARM Helium basically platform, and then an N1 and E1, which is more structural kind of infrastructure, which they promise. And here's the thing, all the articles I read from the people who I know who've been doing this for years stated the last two times ARM has came out with these kinds of announcements, the stats and the numbers and the percentages basically all came true. If it wasn't 100% true, they were really close to being perfect with their numbers, and they're promising upwards of a 15 times increase in performance with this helium driver set for processors, which means, see, the Linus and the Rant, see, he knows what the hell he's doing, okay? He ain't no dummy. Which means it's very plausibly possible by the end of 2021, because these things take time, by the end of 2021, we are going to have computing devices that will literally outperform a majority of the Intel-based boards. Will the software be available for it that will be able to maximize it? I don't know. Will the drivers be available to really maximize it? I don't know. Will the applications be able to really take advantage of all the cores and all the threads? I don't know. But they're setting the base. They're setting the standard. They're setting the infrastructure available for ARM to begin that hard hit into the laptop space, into the portable computing space, into a desktop-like space, because desktops are almost dying too, and into the server closets where they do see, and I do believe ARM, I'm not going to say it's going to take over the world. They're going to take over a substantial portion of revenue in all computing. It's just a matter of time.
Oh, yeah. And just think about the automotive world. Why would you put anything Intel in there, even the head units anymore? Because you could be running Android on the head unit and doing everything.
Yeah, this to me is the beginning of a very strong shift in everything. Now, the real key is ARM going to invest in companies to help create IDEs and stacks and frameworks and tools for people to make programming easier? Now, here's the logic. NVIDIA, what they did on the most recent game console release, the Nintendo Switch, the long and the short of it, Nintendo Switch, by strictly sales numbers, number one fastest selling console in the history of the world, period. Whether it's handheld or whether it's regular game console, they're literally beating everybody. NVIDIA did the processor in that device, but they also put in the software, SDK, the I can't remember what SDK stands for now.
Software Development Kit.
Thank you. They basically designed the entire software development kit. And every game developer working on the Nintendo Switch has said, that I've heard, this is the easiest platform they've ever programmed for, and it's been easier to port software to it, which tells me that these kinds of things are becoming really mature, really stout, really good. So there's little doubt in my mind, if ARM wants to, they will be able to give people an extremely strong software development kit that really should speed up everyone's else's adoption, and possibly speed up the actual end result product delivery kind of thing. If that does happen by the end of 2021, we might see a really big paradigm shift in everything.
Well, along with what you're saying, a lot of the internet runs on a LAMP stack. And for those that don't know the acronym LAMP, that's Linux, Apache, MySQL, PHP. Now, if you're running a LAMP stack, it really doesn't matter whether you're running Intel hardware or AMD. I'm sorry. It just doesn't matter. Linux. I'm sorry. Boy, why can't I say anything right? x86, ARM, Cell, it just doesn't matter what hardware you're running on, unless you're using a third-party library that's Intel only that you can't compile, that you just got a binary for. But other than that, if you're writing PHP for a LAMP stack, it doesn't care what hardware it's running on.
Yeah, there's a certain amount of abstraction that happens. Now, the devil's advocate is the farther you are away from writing, you know, raw code, the more of a performance decrease you're going to see, blah, 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 blah. But,
mm-hmm.
But, sure. But we are in an extremely overpowered land. 90% of the computers people buy today, they will never use 90%+ of the processing power or the RAM or anything else. So it's okay if the software is a little bit heavier, and I don't think the end users are going to see any real difference or any slowdown, unless of course you're running Windows. two more really quick notes, Rich, which I'm pretty sure you're going to have at least a feeling on, is 839, 840. First one is, it's now official. We've been talking about it off and on for probably 2 years now, but it's now real. The 1 terabyte micro SD card is now purchasable from SanDisk. And wow, that's all I got to say. That is insane.
So, all right. My 2012 MacBook Pro comes with an SSD that's 256 gig. I have a SD card. It's a flush mount SD card holder, and I have a 256 gig SD card, micro SD card, I should say, in my MacBook Pro. So I've doubled the amount of memory. In turn of the century, I was working at a company. We had a 2 terabyte jukebox that was the size of an industrial, not like a home refrigerator, but like a commercial refrigerator. It was 2 terabytes of nearline storage. And this thing, you'd be lucky if you could move it in a pickup truck. So the idea that, you know, you could sneeze and lose your 1 terabyte of storage, that's pretty phenomenal. That thing is smaller than the nail on your pinky.
Yeah, it's going to be available in April, it says, for $449 for a terabyte. And for the 512 gig version, it's going to be $199. And by the hard drive and storage prices I've seen in the last 6 months, there's little doubt in my mind by April 2020, it will be $150 or so.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that's when I'll buy.
Exactly. Now, the second one, I honestly liked this link because it was a like confirmation bias. As soon as I thought this, it seemed like a day or two later, I saw a link on it. And it was, let me see if I can get the correct website here. This was on the register.co.uk.
Correct.
Sorry. NVMe is, I don't know how old it is, Rich. Here's the thing. I literally don't know how old it is. I did find out the desktop computer at my work is well over a year old, and it has an NVMe drive in it. I had no idea. The guy told me that. I didn't believe him. I opened the damn case up. He's right. He has an NVMe drive. So I don't know how long it's been around, but Western Digital, there's only 3 plants in the world now that make genuine hard drives, whether it's spinning disk, or whether it's SSD. There's only 3 companies now that make it in the world, and Western Digital is one of them. And they said, as of February 27th, they're seeing such an uptick in NVMe sales and demands and orders that they see an end to SATA drives coming much quicker than they expected.
Wow.
I know. We as a people are going to have to get ready, because there's going to be a prime time here in the next, I'm going to say under 6 months, where if you want, you'll be able to get like a 4 terabyte SATA drive for maybe $40, because they're just going to do everything they can to just get rid of them and just shift everything over to NVMe. I've even seen an NVMe thumb drive, basically. It's a hard drive enclosure. That's like a fat thumb drive that you open up and you stick an NVMe drive in. These things are taking over faster than any storage platform I've seen before. This is kind of insane. And when Western Digital says this kind of thing, they're honestly, I don't think they're saying it just to try to get their stock price up. I really do think that they believe that they're seeing a really fast shift to a different platform than they thought it was going to be.
So somehow I have the sense we're coming to the end of the show, and there's 2 links I want to talk about. So I can't get away from 842, which the Shiva plug, which I believe is the generic brand for the Pogo plug. And I have an original Pogo plug, which is basically a wall wart with an ARM processor in it. And it had an Ethernet jack, and I don't remember. I think it had Wi-Fi on it. I can't be sure. Maybe it didn't have Wi-Fi. But it had an Ethernet jack and a USB port. I think the generic Shiva plug version had an SD card slot on it also.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing I did hear Shiva plug mentioned a lot, but I don't think I actually ever saw one. So it basically just looks like, yeah, like a fat wall wart, and it has a bunch of ports there on the bottom. So this basically is a wall outlet mountable server is what I take it.
So it's got two Ethernet, one USB type A, which I was like, yeesh. Mini USB UART, micro USB, micro SD card slot, and then another USB type A. So yeah. What is the processor on this? Because I don't know if I'd spend the money on it.
It says a dual core A53, which is a very high number, which I believe is a slower number. But yeah, it has a total of three USB ports on it and two NICs on it. I could see this being really useful, but because of the processor, I don't think you're going to get crazy throughput, but it could still be very, very functional.
So gig of RAM, 4 gig eMMC, which is nice because then you can, you know, you don't need a micro SD card to run it. It serves a niche. I don't know that it's something I'd run out and buy.
Yeah, it was a bit, to me, pricey. I want to say it's $89. Mm-hmm. For $89, look, I really do appreciate the convenience of it because you literally just plug it up to a wall and you have what you need. If because of the processor on it, and if it had USB 3, of course. I could see this being like a $50 device, $50 to $60 device, but $89 seems a bit much.
Is there Wi-Fi or Bluetooth on board or no?
Optional wireless, it says.
It's kind of a throwback, like if you, you know, yearn for your ancient pogo plug. But I hate to say it, I think I'd pass. If I got it as a Christmas present, I'd smile, but I don't think I'd go out and buy one.
Yeah, it says it's Pico ITX form factor, pre-orders from Marvel, who is a really long-going manufacturer, has opened pre-orders for $89, and it does say it runs Ubuntu, and they expect it to ship in April, which now is only a month away. Well, that was the first one that you said.
852.
Oh, so, man. I saw this and I had such mixed feelings, Rich. Go ahead.
Okie doke. So I was looking over this today, and so it says Google to launch Edge TPU powered Coral. I don't know how you say this. It's spelled Coral. Coral Development Board and USB Accelerator. So the Coral looks like a Pi 7. It kind of looks like if a Raspberry Pi 7 and an Odroid XU4 had a baby. So there's a heat sink and fan, USB-C ports, USB-3 ports. There's a four-wire header there. A bunch of stuff going on. But the big deal is that this is TPU. What does TPU stand for? It runs their TensorFlow software, and it has an ASIC on board, which is application-specific integrated circuit. So they have it in a Pi-like form factor, and they also have it, which is like $150, and then they have it as a USB stick for about $75. I might jump on the USB stick for myself.
I do not see what the TPU stands for. It's $150 for the board. Pre-shipping, pre-anything else.
It might be TensorFlow Processing Unit or Tensor Processing Unit.
Honestly, that would make a hell of a lot of sense. This is interesting. First, I'll say interesting. Google I.O. is coming up in 2 months. I would hope at Google I.O. they would literally have talks about when to use this, why to use this, how to use this, all that kind of thing. Because for $150, it seems expensive. Now, I have no idea what the functionality is of this TPU co-processor.
All right, so it's machine learning, so it'll do facial recognition, object recognition, all of that stuff.
It's, look, man, Saying it does machine learning is literally, look, I love you, Rich. It is one of the most useless
things. It's like saying AI?
No, it means nothing. Quite literally, if you look back, there's a article there. It's called OXO. OXO was the very first time where somebody touted that they're using artificial intelligence in their software. And this was from 1952, people, okay? Because it was a tic-tac-toe game that the moves were not predetermined and the computer didn't make its decision until you did. So it was artificial intelligence. Look, there's no doubt in my mind that this coprocessor is optimized for something. It's not optimized for machine learning because there's no such thing. It can be optimized to run R or some code set or some binary language or something to that effect. So to me, this is literally just skullduggery. This is balderdash. This is what did they say in Christmas Carol? Humbug. Humbug. Do you know what the word humbug means?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what it is. It's humbug. This is just fluffery on top of marketing, unless, of course, Google offers a really good SDK to interface with this coprocessor.
Well, they do.
Well, and that's the thing. I do believe it can do really intricate facial recognition fast and that kind of thing.
Right.
But $150. See, to me, when I hear edge devices.
I hate the word edge. I hate IoT. I hate edge.
I know, but so what they're admitting with this board is the cloud is too slow. We don't care if we have 5G and the actual cloud will never be enough processing power to do what you need it to do. So you need to spend a lot of money on this artificial intelligence, machine learning, TPU coprocessor to actually do what you need it to do. And that's fine if that's the truth, but I don't think that's the truth. I can see the coprocessor being needed to accelerate certain things, but there's no doubt in my mind. There's no way this board is going to do everything. This is Google we're talking about. It's going to require an internet connection, and it's going to require to communicate with their cloud services. So I'm a little bit lost about what their end goal is with this device, except for just trying to get people out there and code on it. And it sounds like okay specs. This is a ARM Cortex A53. We just had an ARM Cortex A56, and we were making fun of it, Rich. Okay, this is now an ARM Cortex A53. It's really close to the same processor. And then it has this Google Edge TPU coprocessor delivering up to 4 TOPS. TOPS, which I'm pretty sure had something to do with like flops. I have no idea, but it's in all caps. So it must be important, right? It has 1 gig of RAM, 8 gig eMMC, Bluetooth, Wi-Fi, blah, blah, 300 pin board connections. So that's a hell of a lot of connections.
Where are they stuffing that?
I don't know. That's what the description says. Maybe it's supposed to be 30.
I'll tell you what I like about all of their edge connectors, actually, it looks like everything but their Ethernet connector, is they notch the board for the USB-C, the HDMI, and it could be the USB-3 also, I'm not sure. So it actually occupies less vertical space. Not that it really matters in that form factor, but if other board manufacturers are listening, that's the way to do it.
Yeah, it definitely helps. Slim everything. It has two USB-C ports. One of them is strictly for power. The other one is like an OTG port is what it says. This is the kind of board that I don't see myself ever purchasing, but I don't think it's geared for me. That's the whole thing. I want to wait and I want to see what Google says can be done with this. And then I want to see other companies saying, here, buy my X that I built. And then when we look at it, we can say, well, look, it has this port here, this port here, this port here. This is the Google board. You know what I mean? And then we'll have some confirmation this thing is actually friggin' useful. But until then, maybe their number one purchaser will be the NSA, for all I know.
Okay, so here's under one of the images. It says, Coral USB Accelerator is similar to the Intel Neural Compute Stick or the Orange Pi AI Stick. I hate to say it, before I The order I would buy something like this is I would buy the Google, the Intel, and last the Orange Pi if I was going to be buying these products. But the USB, the Coral USB, will plug into your Raspberry Pi and you can run it from there.
Yeah, now that to me, I understand, I think, a little bit more. Because what it means is, like, this is one of the reasons why I don't run dual monitor setups, Rich. Because when I have a dual monitor setup and I do something really taxing on my computer, then both monitors are dead. I can't use either one of them. I like having two computers with two monitors. So with this USB, Coral, whatever, USB, you can then type a command, hit enter, send it to the USB device, let that thing warm your coffee up while your normal computer still is completely useful and functional. It does look like it will say it does support Python and C++ languages, and that's all they mentioned. Now, when I think big, hard, complex problems, I really don't think either one of those programming languages, but I do know that the uptick in people programming in Python and C++ has literally went crazy in the last 2 or 3 years. One, Python is super easy to program. I literally could lose, like, you know, a third of my brain cells and probably still code something useful in Python. It won't be, you know, great, but it will work. And C++, because it's open and there are compilers for C++ on literally everything, that's why I think they support that. So I don't think what they're looking for is great, powerful coding systems. They're looking for coding systems that any and everybody can use. And yeah, I did see a study from DoD that said the number one platform for artificial intelligence, machine learning, blah, 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 for the last 18 months has been Python in a like 8 times more than any other programming language, which I ain't gonna lie, shocked me. But then when I stop and think about Python, you know, it is really easy to get in and just bang some code out. So, I mean, see, me being me, I keep trying to think what kind of task could I do where I would need to offload a complex task to a different device. For me, it's just simple things like taking an audio file that's a waveform and converting it to OGG, or doing some kind of transcoding like that, or taking a video file and changing it to a different format. That's the only kind of things I know that I would need this kind of thing for, but I'm not doing anything complex like what I'm sure other people are out there trying to do. So I want to hear hopefully about people using these in the future for a task, and then hopefully being able to understand what the hell they're talking about.
So for me, it would be facial recognition, those types of things.
But that's the thing. I cannot, listen, I can't, there's a lot I can't say. Okay, I'll just say that. There's a lot I can't say. There's no special sauce needed to do facial recognition. There's no hardware needed to do facial recognition. It's literally nothing more than simple algorithmic pattern matching on large data sets using JSON-like queries. That's easy. I can do that on an 8086. I don't need crazy, ridiculous, hard, dedicated software. Now, if you need to do facial recognition right now and you need it done in a second, I can see you needed extreme dedicated hardware for it. But if it can take 20, 30 seconds to do the query, I don't see why any special hardware is needed. Look, not trying to sound dumb. I've sat down and I've done facial recognition matching, pushing sets of pictures against sets of pictures where each set was easily over 16 million. And I got results before I was done, like taking a sip of my drink. And none of this was on supercomputers. None of this was on any kind of extreme hardware. This was on normal, like business hardware. So here's my question. Are these things pricey? Because I kind of think these things are pricey.
$75, I think, is worth a spin. $150 is getting near the edge of, I'll wait on that.
Yeah, what I really hope is that the people who use these talk about it. Dare I say blog about it or YouTube about it or whatever about it. Because I want to see these things in use and I want to hear the benefit to them, because I know there's no way I'm thinking about all the different use cases. And I know there's definite things where it's necessary to have your answer right away. I mean, if you're doing facial recognition at like an NSA grade institution, oh, you want that facial recognition to work before you can blink. Me at home, I don't know if I need it. I don't know if I need it quick. I guess I would.
So if you're doing facial recognition of a live video stream on a Raspberry Pi, you're getting about one frame a second that it can analyze. So the idea is to speed it up, that you can analyze more frames a second, or maybe frames from multiple sources, because usually you have more than one camera stream that you're going to want to be analyzing.
Well, do you think one of these devices could handle more than one stream?
Well, it depends on how you push it to it, because you can stream switch, or there's two ways of doing it. You could either switch the streams, or you could put multiple streams together, like doing split screens.
Gotcha.
All right. So John Hollinger is messaging me right now. He got a $20 Wyze security camera, and he just caught his kid up past bedtime, and he's sending me Voxer messages of it.
Very cool, very cool. One more link I want to talk about, Rich, 851. I had extremely mixed feelings about this when I first saw this. I love competition. I want more competition on everything. I want, you know, more competition on breakfast cereals. I want more competition everywhere. But I really don't like it when Sony does stuff, because if history's any example, Sony will mess anything up they've ever done. Like all of their laptops they did were the worst laptops you could ever work on in your life. Or their
Vio. Even the Vio? Don't tell me the Vio was no good.
They were good. They were just impossible to work on because they're so proprietary and they did things so backwards. They announced that they have a CF Express, a compact flash express 2.0 standards that promises speeds reaching 4 gigabytes a second, which is on par with the average NVMe SSD. So we have NVMe literally taking over the world, and now we have Sony saying they have their own thing that is going to compete with it. Knowing Sony, their prices will never be competitive. Knowing Sony, just to buy the cable will cost you $20. I would like it if they would like open this up for more people to do it, because, you know, I really love competition. But this kind of thing almost scares me. I'm afraid that someone's going to come up to me with something, a device, in the next 2 years, say, hey, can you take a look at this and fix this? And I open it up and I see a compact flash express, and then I'll just close it gingerly and hand it back to the person and tell them, no, I'm not working on it.
Yeah, I'm a little worried about something that doesn't fit a current form factor. If it's not microSD, SD, if it's not something, and, you know, even the microSD they're talking about, or they have higher speed standards, it will still fit the old slot. So it's legacy based, or it has legacy capability for legacy devices. But if you have the ultra fast, whatever the new standard is, you can plug it into that and it'll perform. So yeah, we've been through a whole bunch of versions of things. Like, I was just going through monitor cables yesterday, and because I've done a lot of traveling, a lot of IT work on the road, I would have a bundle of cables because I didn't know what I was plugging into. And I'm saying, like, oh man, you know, HDMI, DVI, you know, DisplayPort, mini DisplayPort, all of the stinking standards. And I'm like, F this.
Yeah, I mean, I love competition, but I don't like it when with hardware there's too many choices to where, yeah, like when I went to conferences and I was going to give a presentation, I literally had to pack like 6 different cables in my bag because I had no idea what their
Then you got to worry about gender.
Yes, male to female, yes. And it was really annoying. I really like that right now, if I have HDMI, yep, I feel confident, at least I shouldn't have issues.
Good luck.
Yeah, I know. Were there any other links you wanted to bring up last second?
No, I think I'm good.
Okay, there were more links that I'm going to try to bring up next week, like BeagleBone AI board, how to run DOS on a Raspberry Pi. Why not? And Thunderbolt 3, aka USB 4, is coming down the corner. And there's another one there about Amazon Fire Stick, $30. You can basically crack it, hack it, and load an alternate firmware on it. And considering a Fire Stick is only like $30-$40, I'm really tempted to buy one and try to do this.
Yeah, that was the one. If I was going to talk about, I'd want to talk about that one.
Well, let's wait a week because I might try to buy one of these between now and then.
Cool. Okay, I may have a couple.
Oh, even better. Rich, if people want to hook up with you, catch up with you, I'm going to say maybe they shouldn't go to Google Plus.
You know, it's funny. People start following. I've had a couple of people start following me on Google Plus in the last 2 weeks. I'm like, really? Really? So flyingrich.com, I have all of my social media, podcast, videos, whatever I've been up to there. And every once in a while, my Instagram feed works and goes there also, but it hasn't been reliable. But yeah, flyingrich.com, you catch up to me on Instagram, flyingrich official. So it's flyingrich_official.
Very cool, very cool. I will say, if anyone wants to send us an email, minipcshow@podnuts.com, I believe is the email address. Minipc@podnuts.com. If you want to send us a voicemail, 7076-PODNUT. If you want to email me personally directly, it's either mail@podnuts.com or doordoorgeek@gmail.com. Again, Tony, I'm sorry. I really am sorry, Tony. Thank you for sending the emails in. Thank you guys for all the support. Thank you guys for all the downloads. And whatever you do, do not forget to support those who support you. We will talk to everyone again in about a week.
This is Martin from PodNuts Pro. Thank you so much for choosing this podcast to be in your ears right now. Don't forget to support all the other PodNuts shows on the PodNuts Network. And we cannot do this without you. So please, if you have any questions, comments, concerns, email us at podnutspro@podnuts.com.